Across the ASEAN, only on Money FM 89.3.
You're listening to Across the ASEAN here on Money FM, and we head over to Indonesia's markets, and we're starting to see that the Jakarta Composite is starting to stabilize a bit. But let's first talk about the Indonesian rupiah, which is seen as one of the weakest currencies in the world. At the moment, there are some implications with regards to the draft budget that the Indonesian government is preparing as another response to the economic downturn brought about by the COVID-19 pandemic. Today on Across the ASEAN, we're joined by Mr. John Rachmat, strategist at Pinnacle Investments, to help us understand why this is such an important matter. Mr. Rachmat, good afternoon and welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Ong.
So again, let's talk about the draft budget. It is arguably the biggest talking point for Indonesia's markets and the overall economy. And this will also see the central bank backstopping the deficits. Can you talk to us about what the market risks behind this move might be? And what will this ultimately mean for the rupiah, which we mentioned is also one of the worst performing currencies, not just in the region, but arguably also across the world?
Let me just quickly mention the currency before emphasizing the issues surrounding the draft budget. If you take a look at the fundamentals of the Indonesian rupiah in itself, then we should actually feel bullish, because in past years, for example, 2018, when the currency was under severe pressure, that was really caused by rising current account deficit, practically driven by a spiking crude oil price. If you remember, it was up to $80 per barrel at the time, and a lot of people were wondering whether it would go, you know, all the way to $100 and so on. Now, as you know, the crude oil price had collapsed earlier this year when the global economy slumped. It has now stabilized around $40 to $50 per barrel. But if it stays there, and it's likely to, given the weak global economy, then the Indonesian current account deficit should do well this year, and hence, you know, the rupiah should be strong as well. But as you observe, the currency actually has come under a lot of pressure. And this has to do with the draft budget that the government submitted for next year. Now, just let me give you some numbers to illustrate why this is a big issue. When the draft budget for this year, 2020, was approved by the parliament around October last year, if I remember correctly, the deficit the government was projecting for this year was only minus 1.76% of GDP. And the gross issuance of government bonds needed to finance that deficit is about 742 trillion rupiah. Now, after the pandemic strike and the government had revised the budget for this year twice, that deficit has ballooned from 1.76% to minus 6.34%. And the government had actually to withdraw a law which prohibits government budget deficit from exceeding minus 3% in order to submit this new budget. The amount of bonds that the government had to issue to finance this had also ballooned from the previous estimate of 742 trillion rupiah to 1,679 trillion rupiah, so way more than double the initial forecast. The bond market was relatively calm in the face of this new announcement, because the government emphasized that this is a crisis year and they'll be getting the central bank to help, what they call the burden sharing scheme. So around 700 trillion rupiah also would actually be purchased by the central bank. The distinguishing feature of this QE program by Indonesia is not only the central bank will buy the government bonds at the primary market during auction for a significant portion, for about 395 trillion rupiah of the amount that the central bank will buy. The government will actually pay zero interest to the central bank. Now, that's very unique, because no other countries that apply QE, and many other central banks do QE, of course, as we know. Bank Indonesia is not the only one doing QE, but none of the other countries actually ask the central bank to suffer zero interest income on the government bonds that they would purchase through this program. That's what the Central Bank of Indonesia will be doing. The central bank governor, Pak Peri, has been reiterating to the media numerous times that this is a very unique situation, a crisis year, and he promised that this is a one-off event. So that basically calmed the market, and as you see, the bond market in Indonesia continues to do well. Right. However, during the Independence Day celebration, the government revised the draft budget for next year, 2021, and this is where the problem really focus on, because they are still projecting a government budget deficit of minus 5.5% of GDP, and the total gross financing needs for bond issuance would still exceed 1,500 trillion. So still more than double the normal gross number, you would say around 740 or 750 trillion. And the reason given that, the economy will take time to recover and so on. Without the central bank assistance, basically, you would expect the market to buy 26% more bonds next year as compared to what's likely to happen this year. Now, if you ask the central bank to help again with another burden-sharing scheme, then all these promises about this year being a special, unique year, just a one-off, will all be gone, and one-off will be replaced by two-off. And that is something which the investing community has been very concerned. If I may read to you a statement made by Fitch Ratings, the authorities have indicated the debt monetization will be a one-off measure this year. At the same time, it does raise some questions about Indonesia's policy approach over the medium term. If it were to occur repeatedly beyond this year, it would raise the potential for government interference in monetary policy making and could undermine investor confidence. So if the government pushed that through and the rating of the government bonds actually were cut by the rating agencies, please remember that international investors cannot invest in government bonds which are rated below investment grade. That is the main risk.
Right. We've actually seen that Indonesia's bond markets have been actually fairly strong, but you are seeing this happen despite the fact that foreign investors have shied away, perhaps because they're foreshadowing these potential downgrades on Indonesia's bond markets. Despite the fact that the demand is coming from these domestic investors, how finite is the demand from domestic investors to sustain Indonesia's bonds if there are these underlying potential risks that you've just outlined?
Okay, so who are the buyers for Indonesian government bonds at the moment? The statistic that I have is up to 18th of August. Up to that time, the foreign buyers account for about 28.6% holding of the Indonesian government bonds. This is the largest holder by any measure. But this year, as you mentioned, there actually have been net sellers to the tune of 122.9 trillion rupiah. The second biggest buyer are actually the onshore banks. They account for about 26%. And this year, they have been increasing their holdings. So they actually net buy to the tune of 283 trillion rupiah. The next largest buyer is the central bank, holding 16.3% of the total government bonds in issuance. And they have been net buying to the tune of 262 trillion rupiah. So basically, it's the local banks which have been buying aggressively, so that the fact that the foreign holders have been net selling were not in any way damaging the bond market. The European Central Bank actually have been prohibiting European banks from paying dividends this year. And the Monetary Authority of Singapore does something similar. They capped the amount of dividends that Singapore banks can pay. The purpose of all these actions by the central bank authorities were really to preserve capital, because during economic crisis, there'll be a lot of companies that fail. And therefore, the amount of non-performing loans would shoot up. So the authorities, knowing this, have been telling all these banks, be careful, preserve your capital. And this is the main message. Indonesian authorities, unfortunately, take the different tack. They were encouraging the local banks to lend more, because, if the banks do not lend more, then how the economy is going to be revived. But nonetheless, bankers being bankers, they actually are very conservative by nature. So regardless of what the authorities are saying, they themselves have been slowing down their loan growth substantially this year. And so rather than, giving out more credits and risking them turning into bad loans, the banks choose to buy government bonds instead. The returns will be much lower as compared to if they lend to good quality borrowers. But because good quality borrowers are very difficult to find in this time of economic crisis, they choose to buy government bonds instead. And that's why the local bond market has continued to be strong, despite the net selling by foreign investors. This is a situation where the Indonesian government bond is still rated investment grade. If that rating is under any kind of risk, then the amount of net selling by international holders will be far more than what we have seen so far this year. And I really doubt that any buyers domestically will be able to place that.
All right, so Mr. Akbar, let me ask you then, since this seems to be the big potential risk, what would a potential downgrade, and heaven forbid we're not asking for one, but if this does happen, what could this mean for both the rupiah and the banking sector in Indonesia, since we've identified that these seem to be at least two of the more vulnerable to a possible downgrade?
Well, the banking sector is not doing well already beyond what might happen to the bond market anyway. If you take a look at the second quarter earning results, for example, it's very obvious that across the board there's been a sharp drop in earnings. And this is not special to Indonesian banks. Of course, you know, any other banks in any other countries where the economies are suffering greatly. And just to remind your listeners, you know, global economies are really suffering. It is very difficult to feel any sense of optimism, you know, with regards to the banking sector per se. So if you add the issue of bond rating on top of this, then it's just unthinkable. So please don't ask me about that, Mr. Ong.
Okay, so let me just ask you then very quickly, Ms. Rapat, given everything we've talked about, these possible risks, how is this influencing your strategy? Because there are a number of risks you've just outlined. How are you possibly hedging or managing these possible risks over at Pinnacle?
So we are a quant investor. So all our strategies, we are running a balanced one where we can invest in bonds as well as equities as well as the money market. All of this, both the sector allocation decision as well as the stock picks or bond picks, all of these are actually driven by quant factors. At the moment, our models are still showing optimistic slant to it because, you know, the actual index and put the bond and the equity indices are actually still doing well. So we are still quite invested, but given the risk, we have reduced our exposure. So we are about 55% invested at the moment with about 35% equities and 30% bonds, and the rest are in money markets. The sense is that we would still like to get the benefit of whatever rally the market is giving us investors. But on the other hand, we are also very mindful about these various risks. We do know that it's still up to the government whether to push through this draft budget or not. It's still being discussed in the parliament. And so there is still a good chance that they might wake up to all this risk and substantially revise the budget. And if that is the case, then we would happily, you know, ramp up our holding.
Mr. John Rachmat, strategist over at Pinnacle Investment, thank you so much for joining us today on Across the ASEAN to talk about the risks ahead for Indonesia as they deliberate this momentous draft budget.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.